Good morning, Matt Waldman. It's another Monday. It's the hectic period for you. RSP work going smooth?
As smooth as it can go. So we'll put it that way. We'll see at the end of the week where I'm at. So working on quarterbacks right now. So
I love the quarterbacks. Well, we're going to have some quarterback discussion here. We're also going to talk a little bit about Mike Evans, who just re-signed with the Buccaneers this morning. So we'll discuss that a little bit before the show is over. Go to mattwaldman.com right now. Order up your rookie scouting portfolio. We're all eagerly awaiting April 1, or as we call it here at my house, RSP Day. You should call it that at your house as well. I'm Bob Harris, at Football Diehard, Matt Waldman, at Matt Waldman on the X device, where he actually puts out things of substantial interest, and I just sit there and snipe at people, which seems like, well, I guess I'm like a lackadaisical sniper, because there's been a lot of sniping going on the X, people. Be kind, relax a little bit. So let's jump into some combine discussion, because it is a thing. Rookies not working out the combine, feel it or fuck it.
Feel it. Absolutely feel it, and I totally feel Marvin Harrison's reason. I thought was the best reason I've ever heard is I'm actually preparing for real football. And that's the thing that should matter, because a lot of these things are teaching to the test. You know, how to do a better job at a three-point start when you're a player at a position that never uses a three-point start. You know, is an example of having to learn some things like that, or different drills that approximate what you actually do on the field. You know, the gauntlet to me makes me laugh. People get all excited about the idea of that, to the point now that there's people on X who follow me who during the gauntlet go, oh, Matt Waldman's favorite drill, you know, being sarcastic because of the, you know, just really what they're asking for. There could be better ways to approximate this stuff, but they've basically turned it into a little bit of a carnival.
It always strikes me, because I've interviewed multiple rookies, make the rounds, and on the SiriusXM show, we get them in and you talk to them, and almost to a man, they talk about the focus on getting ready for drills, right? I mean, they're working on their 40, they're working on their three cone, they're doing all these things, then, you know, they're standing broad jump, which they're going to do a lot of over the course of a career in the NFL. A lot of standing broad jumps happen during the course of a game. So I agree with you. And I think the one, you know, the thing that, like, I'm an old person. I'm used to things. We are resistant to change. Nonetheless, the world is changing, right? So when Caleb Williams doesn't want to do a damn thing, why would he? Is it going to materially change anything for him? If he doesn't want to give his medicals to all 32 teams, why would he want to give his medicals to all 32 teams? As he says, only one is going to draft him. Yeah. He'll do that on his visits. He's made a lot of money playing college football. Turns out you can do that now. He has options. He doesn't necessarily need to play the game. And if you don't think the game is changing, NFL, think again. It's changing. I mean, there's going to be a combine, but you're going to have to get used to some of the top players not feeling a really strong need to go out and prove themselves in a setting where, like, they only have things to lose. They have nothing to gain. So,
yeah, I mean, would you tell your deepest, darkest secrets at a barbershop or a knitting circle?
I would.
Yeah, you might, because you have nothing to hide. But, you know, I mean, I just think this setting is a sewing circle in terms of gossip and the way people approach things, and they all want to be able to leak information and get clicks, and it's not really worth it when, in fact, rather than spending time on your, you know, on your broad jump or on, you know, on throwing drills, you know, trying to script some sort of throwing workout or a gauntlet drill, maybe the best thing you could do is learn, you know, study up on your cover two, recognizing different cover two disguises, or being able to, you know, work on your film and reading defenses so that when you do actually go into a practice, you're not as lost with all the different types of disguises that the NFL brings at you that you're not going to see as often in the college game that tripped you up, because that's going to make a bigger difference than, you know, whether or not you shaved, you know, 0.3 seconds off of a certain time. You know, it should, at least ultimately, that's the case. The shaving the 0.3 seconds may earn you higher draft capital, which will earn you more money on the short term. But in the long term, you'll make that money back if you're a decent prospect who can actually get a lot better sooner.
We'll talk a little bit more about some of this, some of these quarterbacks in this class and things going on. I wanted to highlight, though. I mean, you know, I feel like I'm on kind of the end of the combine is not really, you know, a needle mover, but for some players it is, and possibly for Xavier Worthy, who ran the fastest 40 time ever. That's, I mean, his name is gonna his name is going to be circulated quite a bit more for the next week or two. And will that matter to NFL scouts?
I think it will. But I think it will matter more to decision makers above the scouts, who probably like to overrule the process a little bit and feel like, well, this is an exceptional situation we need to do. Now, I think Xavier Worthy was already a good player, who has some flaws to his game. I mean, doesn't really matter how fast you are if you fight the football as a wide receiver. And he does have, he's one of those players that when you watch him as a casual fan, you may not see how much he actually fights the football. If you watch it up close, you'll see that he catches those balls a lot, but that there's a lot of little internal conflict going on with his technique that can get exposed a bit more in the NFL. I still think that, you know, to me, speed doesn't make up for that. If there are also scouts who may not really pay attention to that as much either, because if you're just watching all 22, you may not be watching that closely. You may be looking more at the patterns than you are at looking at the hands attack, especially judging the number of receivers who get drafted early who struggle with their ability to hold on to the football. That shows me that maybe there's a lot of scouts who miss that, or decision makers above those scouts who again get seduced by speed. So it will work out for him on the level of, we need a dangerous fast player who doesn't need to be an every down guy. So it will elevate his stock on this from the standpoint of, we were never expecting Xavier Worthy to be a primary number one receiver in the NFL, but can he be our Jordan Addison? Can he be a Devonta Smith, but maybe, you know, more as a speed complement than he is maybe a guy that people want to make believe they're number one receivers because there's a bully on the other side.
Right. And I do think something you said makes a lot of sense. Like the higher end of people looking at these things, what gets a coach fired? Somebody who runs past you, or a defensive coordinator fired, somebody who can run past you and make you look silly. Right. I mean, those are the kind of players that strike fear into people. But John Ross would like us to remember that not all those guys turn into really super great players. Even 4.21 speed is definitely something that people are going to notice.
They will. I mean, Ted Ginn is a good example of a player who was drafted, in the second round? Either first or second round, I believe. And he had a long career, but he was never a prime worth that pick, if you ask me. I would say DeSean Jackson was a great example of a player who was worth that, but he was an all-around strong receiver. Xavier Worthy has a chance to be closer to DeSean Jackson than he does Ted Ginn, but, you know, he's going to have to figure out not how to fight the football. He's going to have to make friends with it a little better.
I felt, you know, speaking of speed and the combine, I felt like there were a number of running backs who probably were a little faster, at least, than people expected. Let's say you do like outpace your 40 as a running back or the anticipated times. Can that lead to second look or maybe even change outlooks?
It will absolutely lead to second looks and change outlooks because, you know, it's a position where it's a little bit difficult to gauge speed overall, just from the standpoint of certain play designs, you know, who you have to outrun, and the angles that players take. And there's a lot of variables in terms of trying to figure out speed accurately on a football field. I mean, you know, are they running to the far side of the field? Is it a play where they have to show a little bit of patience? Is it a play where the linebackers got tricked and they're a step slow and they look slower getting to the running back than they actually are from a time speed standpoint, where there's, you know, you project that to the NFL and there's going to be linebackers who are just as fast, but also now are quicker at diagnosing. So, you know, all those different things come into play and you don't get a great read on some of these players. Like, for instance, for me, Ray Davis, I had as a starter in speed, and that was a guy in that 4.5 range, under 4.55, and he ran a 4.52 this week, and I think that surprised some people. To me, that was a good range of feeling pretty accurate. Or Trey Benson seemed pretty easy to say. He's probably somewhere in the 4.4 range. But
right. He's a big player. Yeah. I mean, he's going to raise some eyebrows with that, right?
Yeah. But Kamani Vidal, you know, I have him as a top 10 running back right now, but I didn't expect him to run a 4.46. And Isaac Guerrero was certainly one that surprised pretty much everybody to that extent for me. But how much does that impact? Because how much do you, you know, what you've got to look at as a scout, from my opinion, is you don't just automatically bump the guy up to the tier that you might put him on from a standpoint of times. You want to look at that and go, why does he look slower than the time that he put up? And if you can provide good logic behind that, then you probably split the difference on some level or lean towards the tier with the faster speed. But you have to kind of be systematic about this, I think, if you're going to get the most out of your evaluation, because you don't want to just completely blow your evaluation out of the water. And because if you just say, well, I had him as a reserve tier player, in terms of speed, you may not even do that. You may not even have tiers like that. Right. You may just go, I'm bumping him up to the second round now, you know, as a value, or a third round guy, when I didn't have him as a drafted option. Well, what's your basis for that? How can you explain that? What do you, you know, do you, you know, it's kind of like giving an employee a promotion because he wore a nice tie. I mean, you know, that there's no real logic behind that. You've got to really be able to explain it. And I think that with Guerrero, what you're going to be looking for are looking at some of the bigger runs. You know, that's one thing that you would pull up and see whether or not he's pulling away from people. And then look for some plays where you just see evidence of that speed, and look for plays where you would expect that speed, but it's not happening. And see if it's a diagnosis issue. See if it's something where he's hesitant or just plays slow as a decision maker. And, you know, if you can kind of figure out those things, then you can kind of, that will not only help you separate speed from the rest of the mix, but it'll help you understand, should I be penalizing him a little bit more as a decision maker because of the fact that he's reacting slowly to things there. And I think that that's probably something that a lot of people don't think about, is that if the speed was so good and nobody expected it, then what's the decision making about with this particular player?
Why does it not show up in his game?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's the essence of it. And I think that's why I'm thinking, you know, phrased it like I did, you know, does it get you a second look, you know, more so than changing outlooks? Because I mean, people are going to go, oh, wow, what he did. Why? Yeah. I think everything you said is on point. Why is that not translating to the playing field during games is the question they all have to ask.
Right now, the narrative is, well, he played behind Jonathan Taylor. Well, he played with Jawar Jordan. Well, you know, look, I like Jawar Jordan as a college player, but I didn't look at Jawar Jordan and go automatically, well, you know, he's a top 10 running back in this class or the past three classes. So, I mean, again, you can talk about that narrative, but then you would have to dig in deeper. And most people who will probably really know the answer are the ones who've interviewed players and athletic directors at Wisconsin and Louisville, because that's where the answer might be, as opposed to on the field too.
All right. Well, silly season is upon us. In addition to all the speculation surrounding the draft and the free agencies coming, the tampering period a week from what, today? Week from the 11th, yeah. And then the signing period Wednesday the 13th. So there's going to be a lot of moving pieces. It all focuses on the quarterback position, though, for the most part. You know, there are some high-end running backs, some high-end wide receivers, although one less after today, two less with T. Higgins franchised. But I want to talk a little bit about the quarterback situations, because I think those are the dominoes that have to fall before other things happen. So I was going to start out with the free agents. Let's start out with the draft picks. I think some spots are seem more likely to get draft picks. But let's say the Bears, is this just a foregone conclusion at this point? Is Caleb Williams going to be their guy?
I think so. I would be surprised if it wasn't. And he's by far the best quarterback in this class. He's the most ready to be a starter. He does have a clear floor that if the Bears approach this the way they approach Justin Fields, it could also be a disappointment, or the way they approach Jay Cutler, you know, that could be a disappointment as well. So that, you know, they have a history of this, especially in their front office with the hiring practices that they make with support staff. But if the support staff's there, he's the guy most likely to emerge and give the Bears the elite quarterback that they've lacked since, and I know people are going to say Sid Luckman, I'll say Jim McMahon.
Right.
Before Harris, basically. Yeah, he was a great quarterback with a coach who just didn't want to throw the football. When Steve Young says he learned more about quarterback play than from Jim McMahon than anybody but anyone else other than Bill Walsh, it was Jim McMahon. You know, the guy was just held together by bailing wire. So, yes, I would say, you know, if you're not going to keep Justin Fields, Caleb Williams is the pick, and I would say he's the – right now, I think everyone wants to get rid of Justin Fields in the Chicago area.
I feel like that is happening as well, and we'll talk a little bit more about Mr. Justin Fields here momentarily. But let's say if we're sticking with the rookies, the Commanders, of feeling the Commanders is the best landing spot for –
Kirk Cousins to return, not a rookie.
By the way, I talked to Ben Standing last week, and he was suggesting the same.
Yeah.
You know, so, and we're going to hear more of that, because I think Cousins is becoming a preferred target for multiple teams. But let's say they go for a rookie. With Cliff Kingsbury, they're missing out on the Caleb Williams, we're going to assume, right?
Yeah. I'm going to say one of two players. I would say Bo Nix. It would be a really good landing spot there, mainly because he is kind of a Kirk Cousins-like player. He doesn't have a fantastic arm, but he has an arm that can make every required throw, just not the special Josh Allen howitzer throws to get out of trouble. You know, he's a player who can't be late and make up for it. He's a player that, you know, can't make the uber athletic, I'm going to paint myself out of the corner throw. But that said, he moves well in the pocket. He's got a strong play action game, which will mesh well with the running game. I think he reads the middle of the field better than people realize. You know, one of my colleagues nicknamed him Bubble Screen Bo, you know, for his years at Auburn and even at Oregon. But watching enough of his game, he's really good in the middle of the field, and there's a lot of decent receivers here. I think that if with a good infrastructure around him, and the Commanders have the makings of that with their run game and with their receivers who are getting seasoned enough, that I think with a player like Nix and maybe even Penix to a degree, I just think Nix is a little bit better at moving around the not moving around the pocket, but getting outside the pocket and running than Penix is. And that could, you know, give them a combination of a player who I think that can continue to develop quickly. And he plays low mistake football. That's the other thing that I like about him, is that he's mature for a young quarterback. Doesn't mean that, you know, if he gets in the wrong system and he gets a Matt Nagy type of coach, and now he's like everything's swimming in his head because they're not really protecting him well. Yes, he could his decision making can deteriorate. But right now, what I've watched at Oregon and even at Auburn was a player who often understood the leverage of defenders on receivers, knew when to make some of those riskier throws and did it, and knew when to throw the ball away. And he wasn't like Kirk Cousins early in his career, where Cousins thought he had Brett Favre's arm and would stand in there and try and make ridiculous throws with 320-pound people bearing down on him. Nix is more of a player where I think he goes, look, I know my lane, and if I can't do it, the ball, I'm running or the ball's getting thrown away. And I think that bodes well for him to be probably what the dreaded game manager, but game manager kind of plus version.
So Bo Nix not viewed as not worthy of the number two pick at this point in time. I mean, would that mean maybe facilitate a trade down? Or
that's what I would do. But, you know, there some teams are going to go for the splash of J.J. McCarthy.
We're going to talk about that.
You know, some teams are going to look at Drake May. And I'll just put it to you this way. The Bears and the Commanders, and I would probably even add the Patriots to this list, bad teams stay bad. And, you know, when you say, well, wait, the Patriots were a dynasty, and I'd say yes, but their draft picks sucked, didn't they, for a long time? Yeah. So, you know, if it weren't for the fact that they had arguably one of the five greatest players that ever played the game, you know, at the quarterback position, they might have been a bad team that stayed bad. They've been a bad team that stayed bad. So they
have the third pick. So just to feel and fuck the possibility of the Commanders moving up one spot with the Bears and getting Caleb Williams, or the Bears allowing that.
Yeah, fuck that. That ain't happening. I don't think, unless they keep Fields. If they keep Fields and they can get, do that, I feel that personally. I just don't
think it's
happening.
George Kittle advocating for that, by the way, on the out there on the media circuit, saying, man, build around it, trade that pick. Build around, give Justin Fields the kind of players he needs to excel.
Listen, that was my contention, but my buddies at the Keeping It 100 Bears, you know, podcast, who love Justin Fields when he was drafted, were like, we spent a couple of hours arguing this point back and forth, like good naturedly, but you could tell they were like, we're not feeling this, and I don't think a lot of people that was split. 3 months ago, I don't think it's split now.
Again, we mentioned this last week, but I talked to Hub Arkish from Pro Football Weekly, and he couldn't say enough great things about Justin Fields as a player, as a person, as a worker, as a leader of men. And at the same time, he said, no way that they're not drafting Caleb Williams. And he has another pick. We'll talk about that. Patriots' best landing spot. Is it a quarterback, or is it Marvin Harrison Jr. at number three?
You know, I think the Patriots really are in a situation that a lot of people think that this is the scouts are going to look at this and this class and say the quarterback class is stronger now than it is next year. I don't know whether that perception is going to be true, but that's how they're going to look at it.
People make the other argument, right? That next year is going to be pretty good too.
Yeah, but I've been hearing the opposite too, like how people talk about this. None of them know. This is, you know, if you ask me, very few are.
It's the bird in
know.
The hand, right? That's all we're hearing. There's a good guy right now. I'm not waiting.
Yeah. So, you know, if they can convince themselves of a player, and I would say, you know, they're a team that would probably look at McCarthy, they're a team that may, you know, go with a but see, that's the thing. Do they really want a semi-mobile, semi-strong-armed quarterback, or are they going to go for the athlete? Are they going to try and get a Drake May? Are they going to try and get a Penix? Are they, you know, someone along those lines? Or a Jaden Daniels, you know, as another example.
Would that be, let's say they go for Jaden Daniels, right? Would that be like a sign that the Patriots are trying to
turn the page,
get with the times, yeah, right? Like a young mobile quarterback and, you know, just like, yes, turn the page.
Yeah, I think they would be. And it's very possible that that may happen. And the problem is for me, the Patriots are not a good spot for a rookie quarterback at all right now, because I don't think they have the wide receivers to really support any quarterback. If they didn't look, they screwed it up with Mac Jones. They screwed that up. I'm with Dan Orlovsky on this one, and I'm usually not with Dan Orlovsky on anyone. But you know, and it's not, no offense to him. I mean, I don't know. I just find that when he's making very public statements, some of them I'm not quite an agreement about sometimes. But Mac Jones and Brock Purdy, if they played Trading Places, you probably would have seen the same outcomes in each setting. I liked Brock Purdy more than most. So to me, the Patriots need to get wide receivers and get a get players as good as Ramondre Stevenson at other skill positions. If they do that, then get a quarterback. And I think that they'd be better off with a veteran at that point.
Yeah, I think that does make sense. There's some talk about Baker Mayfield being on their radar. Has a lot of ties to Elliott Wolf and the current crew there, some of the assistant coaches, Alex Van Pelt. So we'll dig into some of this. Before we get into some of the veterans that are going to be playing musical chairs, I want to ask you about J.J. McCarthy. The buzz just increases. It's going crazy. Harbaugh said he's the best quarterback in the draft. Thinks he would be ideal for the Bears. A lot of talk about him being a good fit for the Sean McVay, Shanahan-style offenses. Some of those have openings, right? The Vikings might have an opening if they decide not to pay Kirk Cousins. What's your take on J.J. McCarthy?
I'll be watching more of him probably today and tomorrow as I wrap up my final rankings for it. He's in a position where if his decision-making is what I think deem promising enough, he could probably crack my top five, maybe even a little higher, but I don't think that's going to be likely. I think he's more likely outside that, and he's in that range to me where I feel a whiff of desperation with people. I do understand some of the Zach Wilson 2.0 like mania that's kind of surrounding this kid.
It is a mania. And it started with Jim Harbaugh coming out and saying he's the best quarterback in the draft, and then people started. That's where I caught it, right?
Yeah.
Was the first time. And I mean, to me, as the cynic, I'm saying, well, of course he says that. That's his quarterback. He's backing his guy. I've seen people suggest, and I think it's absolutely insane. I'm saying fuck this, but that J.J. McCarthy gets drafted fifth overall by the Los Angeles Chargers. What the hell, people? Stop it. Stop it.
That's pretty funny. But, listen, he's the same guy who said chicken is a nervous bird and he shouldn't eat it and then changed his mind
on it. He's
not wrong,
but he should eat it.
Yeah, but
they are nervous, but he should eat them.
Yeah, but he changed his mind on that too. I don't know. I think that really, he's a salesman. That's what that's what coaches are in the college game.
Yep.
You have to be a salesman. And I just don't trust salesmen when it comes to this particular situation. 100%. So, no, I'm honestly, J.J. McCarthy's going to have to change my mind. And I've seen enough of him to think he could get there, but they're on mania of hope more than the goods right now. And it's a bit of a projection.
Talking about the teams that are going to be running with that McVay Shanahan style of offense, the Atlanta Falcons will be. And so, maybe JJ, they have the eighth pick overall. Maybe JJ McCarthy is something under the radar there. But more of what we're hearing is veteran free agents or trade possibilities. So I'm going to throw out the names that are being the most mentioned right now for Atlanta. And you can give me the feel or fuck them on these guys: Kirk Cousins, Baker Mayfield, Justin Fields. And it sounds like the reporting from the combine is Kirk Cousins is the leader right now of this, that Arthur Blank would really like to land him. Mayfield is considered the dark horse here. We may have more on that when we talk about Mike Evans in a minute. Justin Fields seems like he's fallen out of favor here.
Yeah, it's a shame because if I think Arthur Blank wants to win now, as in like actually yesterday, and they have a decent defense and that they had a strong run game with a good offensive line. So Kirk Cousins makes the most sense to basically get Matt Ryan 2.0 injected immediately into that offense. And that makes sense to me as the best landing spot for immediate success. For lasting success, I would say Justin Fields is the best option, mainly because I still think that there's more that you can do with him. And if Sean McVay could make howdy doody out of Jared Goff and string him up like a puppet and just tell him what to do and micromanage every little thing that he did in the huddle, I'm sure that they could probably do the same with Justin Fields and get similar results, even though I would say Goff was, it was a bit insulting to Goff's potential. And I think it would still be to Fields at some point too. I think Mayfield can do this, and it would be the McVay system would be obviously a very good fit for him. I just don't know if you're getting the upside that you think you are out of him, whereas I think Fields offers more upside. Cousins offers immediate strong opportunity to be a contender now.
Yeah, my feeling is I've been on this all along. I want Kirk Cousins back where Justin Jefferson wants Kirk Cousins back, which Me is too. Minnesota. I feel like the Vikings, though, I mean, we've heard the reporting, they are not going to – Kirk Cousins has been the best player of the tag and contract game that I can remember, you know, in recent years for sure. I mean, he's played pretty much every year of his career under a guaranteed contract. That could change this year in Minnesota. They're talking like that. And, you know, the suggestion is they'll let him test free agency, see if he'll offer a bit of a discount to stay with Justin Jefferson, who's going to make a bunch of money at some point soon, like north of $30 million a year. A new deal with Cousins or any quarterback, a rookie would be maybe ideal for them because that would give them the most flexibility. Yeah. But I'll tell you
who I'm feeling at for the Vikings at quarterback, and that's Penix. I think Penix with Justin Jefferson and Addison and Hockenson, that would be a really great fit for him. And I think they have enough makings of a running game that they could spread the field, but Penix could also get a little bit of compliment from a ground game. And what he does on the outside and with the way those players play on the outside, he could have an immediate impact, even though on another team, the fit might not be nearly as strong and I'd rather see him sit. But if there's an organization where I'd say, yeah, I'd take the chance on letting him play a little bit early, it would be Minnesota.
Yeah, that seems reasonable enough. So the Justin Fields sweepstakes may not be limited to the Atlanta Falcons. I mean, the Raiders just hired his former offensive coordinator. I'm sure he'd like to get better back together with Luke Getsy or not. I just heard Justin Fields in the background. Fuck that.
His family down the road from me are saying that right now.
But the Steelers, Mike Tomlin is said to be a huge fan of Justin Fields. Also, I mean, we've heard, you know, discussions. Russell Wilson's going to play somewhere not called Denver soon. And he's going to make the Broncos pay for all of it. So, I mean, he could have some appeal as a minimum price veteran starter with the Broncos chipping in the other $40 million or whatever thereabouts to keep him. So for the Steelers, Justin Fields, Russell Wilson, or is a Pickett or Rudolph, Kenny Pickett, some talk this very week that they think Kenny Pickett can still be the guy. Mason Rudolph, what's the answer there? Who do you feel the answer is there?
I think the answer would be Fields, ideally, because you have the athletic ability to offset some of the offensive line problems that still need to be addressed to some degree. But you have the makings of a complete offense there. And he's a worker. He would fit very well within that culture. He's a young player to grow with. And then you can allow Pickett to be, you know, the number two. And you can let Rudolph be target practice for Myles Garrett. But really, Russell Wilson, I'd love, you know, sentimentally, I'd love Russell Wilson to be a Pittsburgh Steeler for two reasons. One is I've always been a fan of Wilson, and the other is that I'd like to see Bloom and Lammy squirm, especially Bloom, who's, you know, be forced to have to root for Wilson after feeling like he's been a phony for so long. So I think that would be a lot of fun, and I would have to probably start calling in on the Audible during the week to just ask him for takes on Russell Wilson every week just to troll him. In fact, if that happens, I can promise you I am showing up in the chat pretty much every day of the week asking Bloom questions about Russell Wilson to get Lammy laughing.
What if Kenny Pickett?
He's in the pocket when he knows that pressure's coming, he's fine. When pressure is a little bit catches him by surprise, he short circuits. I think that he short circuits a bit in situations where there's a little bit of pressure, you know, in significant game situations. I think he can develop into a Kirk Cousins like player if he can address that. But it's going to take some more patience than what I think the Steelers have already exhibited.
All right, makes sense. I think that's fair assessments all. Mike Evans, I mentioned at the top of this very podcast that he has re-signed with the Buccaneers. 2 years deal, $52 million. That's $26 million a year. Not like super high-end money like the $30 million that we're expecting players to get, but he's like been playing there for 10 years. I feel like this is a great deal for him. It's like a 10-year bump on the last deal he had. He gets the chance to close out his career as a Buccaneer. 10 straight 1,000-yard 1,000-plus yard receiving seasons in his 10 years as Tampa. Been phenomenal. It finishes wide receiver 7 last year. Currently going in best ball drafts that I've been in, is, you know, in the 4th round. Can he continue to produce at the same rate?
I'm thrilled for him, but who's going to throw him the football? That's my question. You know, if it's a rookie, the answer is probably no. If it's a, you know, he might flirt with the 1,000 yards, but people are going to say it's a down season because he's probably not going to be in that 12, 13, 1,400 yard realm. If it's a veteran, if it turns out to be Cousins, you know, that they get, then maybe that happens.
What if it's Mayfield?
Mayfield could do it again. I would like to see Mayfield stay there, to be honest. I think he
Mayfield
should.
Mayfield has said he would like to stay there. I think, you know, to me, this is the most likely outcome, yeah. Is Mayfield staying there. But, you know, they went out and they hired his offensive coordinator, or a Mayfield-approved coordinator, in Lynn Cohen, formerly with the Rams. With the Rams during Baker's, you know, magical, you know, time there. And and now they
games?
Keep Evans.
Yeah,
yeah, 2 games. Right. Yeah. But you know, like, you know, that's... We're hanging a lot on that,
aren't
right?
we? Yeah.
And look, he's built on that, to be fair. I do think that, you know, like, it turns out that people mature and figure things out.
They do.
And realize the approaches they have taken in the past might not be working out. And Baker seems to be on that list of guys while retaining his Bakerness, which is, you know, a little bit of a fiery kind of guy. But
yeah, he's high end. He's like upper end Jeff Garcia, and that's
right. But I do agree with you. I think it's going to be kind of dependent on the quarterback for me. I either way, if you're out there drafting today, price is going to rise a little bit just because there was news, right? Like, you know, you're going to expect to see him jump up into the 3rd round just because everyone knows. But if Baker returns, I mean, you know, let's say Baker returns, everything is status quo. Is he a top 10 fantasy asset?
He could be, but you don't want to draft him at that price. You want to draft him in the bottom of the top 15. If you can get him there or a little lower, then you're doing fine. He's the Derek Carr. He's basically the David Carr, or the Derek. It's the Derek David Carr. I always get these mixed up this time of year. The David Carr of this, you know, past couple of years. The guy
except he's not going to get sacked 8,000 times.
Probably not. No, but he'll probably break the pocket when he shouldn't.
That for sure. So I'm with you kind of on all this. Michael Pittman Jr. becomes probably the top of the free agent wide receiver heap. There are others, you know, available out there. What's his value if he remains a Colt? I find him to be going fairly cheap, right about the same price range as Mike Evans, maybe a little before, but 3rd round, late 3rd round. if he remains a Colt, is that a good value?
Yeah, it might be better value than Mike Evans, because Anthony Richardson, if he's healthy enough, could very well make a big leap next year, even though he didn't get a shit ton of playing time due to his injury. The skills are still there for him to make a quick acceleration up the board.
If everyone who had to put up with me talking about Jahmyr Gibbs last year, and I did it endlessly, is going to have to hear the same thing about Anthony Richardson this year. And you heard it a little bit from me last year, but I am going to be pursuing Anthony Richardson. He's the lottery ticket, people. He's, you know, the affordable lottery ticket. If you want that quarterback 3, that Konami code, the Rich Rebar Konami code quarterback, I don't know that there is another one that matches Richardson. And I do think, because I was told this by a guy named Matt Waldman, who does the rookie scouting portfolio. April 1, people, is coming out. MattWaldman.com.
Yeah.
But I mean, and the way you explained it though last year, it's funny because Chris Ballard talked about him this year, and all the things you said about him last year, Chris Ballard said they saw going in, right? He reveals that this year, like, you know, that like they think he was way better as a passer than the world thought he was as a passer. And it was just a matter of getting him acclimated to the offense and in tune with the language and, you know, translating what he was seeing into making plays. You know, look, we didn't have a huge, you know, data set to work from, but like I have these things called eyes and I watched what he was doing. They need to work on him and get him to avoid injuries. This is doable. They should work on it. They should put effort into it. The Miami Dolphins did it with Tua Tagovailoa. The Colts should copy this and find ways to help him absorb punishments, learn how to, you know, move away from blows and avoid the big hits that he's taken that got him, nipped him in the bud last year. But I'm with you. And I think Michael Pittman will be a big part of that. Watching him play last year was phenomenal, even with Gardner Minshew. But I think the future is bright. So yeah.
The thing is that you really, when it comes to watching quarterback play, you really got to have a process of how you go about doing that, because there's too many variables for you to try and keep track of in your head and say, well, this I'm going to value more than this, or this blends into that, or you start double scoring things or double subtracting in a certain way, and now you're blowing things out of proportion that you shouldn't. And I think that's what happens with the NFL a lot when they look at the position. And I just also think fundamentally they don't really understand what's important and what's not important. They do from a scouting standpoint, but from a standpoint of how to put that in the perspective of what they see with their eyes to what's going on the page. And so some things are going to over or undervalue to a great extent, and they're going to fall into narratives as a result of that. And those, you know, and they look at it as a science project as opposed to a performance project. And that's part of the problem too. So, I mean, we've seen it with Lamar Jackson. We've seen it with Patrick Mahomes. We've seen it with Anthony Richardson. None of these quarterbacks were seen as good as they actually are. And you still see the narrative. I was writing about it last night. That'll be in the rookie scouting portfolio. When you look at some of these players, you know, you look at Caleb Williams, and people are like, the next Patrick Mahomes. He's not the next Patrick Mahomes. He does Patrick Mahomes-esque sort of things, but he's a different player that I have a comp for, and that player is Aaron Rodgers, which is still not bad at all. It's a great player. But that's the player he's aspiring to become. But people look at Mahomes, and what they see is the same reasons they compared Mahomes with Zach Wilson and Drew Locke. These were two players this time during those drafts where people were mentioning Patrick Mahomes in the same breath as these guys. The reason was is they missed on Patrick Mahomes. They missed on him, and instead of just saying, we fucking missed. We didn't know he was good. We didn't think he was going to be that good. Instead, you hear all these former players and former quarterbacks and NFL analysts, instead of saying we were wrong, instead they say, well, if he wasn't with Andy Reid, he wouldn't be the same player. Well, no one would be the same player if they didn't have Tyreek Hill or Travis Kelce or Andy Reid. But in terms of the production and Super Bowl wins, but in terms of like what you'd see on the field, the decision-making, the skills, more likely than not, he'd still be a Pro Bowl caliber player who just doesn't have the end results in with that, you know, in, you know, three Super Bowls in what, 4 years or 5 years. You know, that's the difference with him. But he was the same player. Andy Reid didn't change him. He's still a shortstop. He's still a quarterback playing with shortstop technique. All he did was hire a trainer. He hired him, not Andy Reid. Hired a trainer who helped maximize how he moves so that he doesn't hurt himself doing it, so that he can give him physical support to all the techniques that he does that everyone looked at and said, he's not going to be able to do that in the NFL. He's not going to be able to throw like a shortstop in the NFL. And now every time they see a quarterback who somewhat makes one or two throws without the logic of daring decision-making underpinning it, they go, he's the next Patrick Mahomes. That's bullshit. Fuck that. You know, and that's the thing. Like, you know, Caleb Williams does some of that, and there's some logic to it. But the way that he moves and plays the game is much more Aaron Rodgers-esque. Go watch that. than Patrick Mahomes. But it's the Mahomes is the hottest thing going right now, and teams want to compare other players to it. People in the media want to do that. One, because it's the easiest thing to see. Two, it gets clicks. And three, they want to deny the idea that Patrick Mahomes was that good from the get-go. But the Chiefs, let me just put it to you this way. I heard from Chiefs scouts I've heard that Chiefs scouts were literally giggling like school kids like Mark Schofield and I a year earlier on the RSP film room. Every week watching the scouting tape of the scout team, of him leading the scout team. Like literally giggling, like making it reservation time to watch their scout team's tape of Patrick Mahomes while Alex Smith was in there that first season. So that's not because Andy Reid coached him up. Andy Reid gets credit for a lot, but let's not give too much credit for these players. And let's not give too much credit to some of these quarterback prospects by putting them with probably the greatest quarterback of all time, arguably already.
Let's give some credit to Matt Waldman for having all this beautiful information. Let's give some credit to me for knowing that Matt Waldman's time is limited and that he must get back to work because RSP Day is coming. Did I mention that already? April 1st, people, you will get your rookie scouting portfolio. Go to mattwaldman.com. Put in your order right now. You won't regret it. I have been reading this since the day it came out. What is this, 20 years ago?
Almost.
Wow. And you will love it as much as I love it. You can refer back to previous issues. Also includes dynasty outlooks going forward. Matt, what all do they get with that?
You get also, you know, post draft guide where you get a cheat sheet that also has ADP analysis, where basically I look at the ADPs of early drafts in April and May, and then also compare that to my re-rankings and give you a sweet spot of where you should pick that player. So if I tell you Nick Chubb's the best running back in this class and everybody thinks you're fucking crazy for that, in the past, or Patrick Mahomes, and say, yeah, but you don't have to pick them first overall. You can get them at the end of the second round or the early third round and easily get them and recoup more value. I show you how to do that with pretty much every player in the top 50 to 60, and you get 200 players in that ranking at least, in a tiered cheat sheet format like that. Depth chart analysis as well, so that you kind of get an idea of what they're, you know, who they're competing with for playing time and how I think that's going to work out this year, next year, and the year after. Because I show you where they're going to be free agents so that you get a handy guide to kind of reference that when you're making picks and making decisions between them. And you get updates throughout the year with the newsletter that comes out, monthly for the RSP, at least from June through December. And, look, it's one of the best deals you're going to find in the fantasy space. Definitely.
Get that. I agree. I feel that. All right, everybody. Stick around. We'll be back next week and discuss more things of great interest to you and me and Matt. Bye, Matt. Love you.
Love you.